Alabama, Texas, Oklahoma, to name just a few. What do they have in common? Well, for one, a sectarian monument to the Ten Commandments prominently displayed on government property. And don't buy the empty argument that these monuments somehow represent the universal values this nation was founded on, etc., etc., blah, blah, blah. Just look at the First Commandment from the perspective of anyone who doesn't revere the Christian or Jewish deity. Thou shalt have no other gods before me. And some of the monuments even add additional overtly Christian language to the biblical language. While there have been lawsuits calling for the removal of these unconstitutional displays and governments who have defied court orders to do so, there have also been attempts to at least add diversity to the displays, including those from atheist Satanists and, in several states, American Hindus. Here to explore that last phenomenon is Suhag Shukla, co-founder and executive director of the Hindu American Foundation. Suhag, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
So this issue has come up in at least two states that I'm aware of, first Oklahoma and now Arkansas. Is there a particular aspect of Hindu tradition that helps prompt this?
I don't think so. I think it's maybe trying to keep up with the Joneses at some level, but also maybe wanting to have the same acknowledgement that maybe Hindus feel that Christians and Jews and those from the Judeo-Christian communities get when they see public displays of the Ten Commandments.
I'd like to get your perspective on what it does to a community when there is overt endorsement of one religion over others like this.
Well, we've provided an overview of this back in 2005. But when the U.S. Supreme Court was hearing arguments for Van Orden versus Perry, a case dealing with the public display of the Ten Commandments on Texas state capitol grounds, we really elaborated on, one, not only the church-state arguments that are involved in these sorts of cases, but also specifically the theological differences that come up in terms of Hindu understandings of the nature of God, of the relationship between man and God, and how the Ten Commandments differ from not only Hindu tradition, but also Buddhist and Jain and other Dharmic traditions, and what that might make a Hindu feel like, more so an outsider than someone who's on the inside of the government's good grace.
In Arkansas, the legislature just mandated a Ten Commandments monument earlier this year, but the governor said no to a Hindu monument. Do you know the grounds that the governor used to make that decision?
So from the sources that have come across my desk, it sounds like it's more of a technicality than it is an overt rejection. Now, during the same time period, People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, PETA, also submitted, I believe, a proposal for a display, and that was rejected by the Secretary of State's office. But in this particular case, from what I've read and what I understand, it was that the proposal was not made to the right party. I guess in Arkansas, you have to apply either through the General Assembly or the Arkansas State Capitol Arts and Grounds Commission. So I'm not quite sure what would happen to such an application if it went through those two bodies, because it's still going to have to stand up to constitutional muster.
I'm fascinated and really pleased by the interreligious coalition that is endorsing the Hindu monument in Arkansas. The proposal by the Universal Society of Hinduism has gained the support of Christian, Jewish, and other faith leaders. Regardless of the outcome, talk about the significance of this kind of mutual support.
I think it's beautiful. I think this is what America represents. This is what our founding fathers envisioned in terms of people of different faiths being able to practice their faith privately, but also come together on their shared values. And that's what is so important about the separation of church and state, so that the government isn't playing favorites with any particular group. That said, as beautiful as it is for people of faith to come together, I think that when we talk about public displays, it opens up a can of worms. You know, when are we going to stop? How many displays do you put up? And I think those are important questions to ask. You know, in all fairness, if the Ten Commandments are going to be up there, and certainly the Supreme Court had said that as long as the purpose is not religious alone, but there's some historical context or some other sort of significance, then that they've allowed those sorts of displays. I'm sure that, you know, you can find a secular purpose for any religious display, but then there needs to be a fairness where all communities are represented. And that's where it becomes a difficult and logistical issue, I think, for mm-hmm. government.
What role does Hanuman play in Hindu tradition?
So Hanuman is a deity who is kind of a central character in one of the great epics of Hinduism called the Ramayana. And he's symbolic. He's a hero in this Hindu lore, and there's so many lessons that Hindus draw from Hanuman. He is a symbol of strength. He's also a symbol of pure devotion. He ends up being the only figure in the Ramayana who really is perfect. Even Lord Rama, who is considered a avatar or a manifestation of Vishnu, makes some mistakes as he has manifested as man. But Hanuman and his pure devotion to Lord Rama is something that from a very young age, children are taught to emulate. I know that with our two boys, from when a young age, we would say, oh, you have to be strong like Hanuman. You have to be devoted like Hanuman. So he's really a beloved character in Hindu society as well as Hindu lore.
As the third largest religion in the world, Hinduism is certainly underrepresented in the United States, but there are 3 million followers in this country, so it's foolish for some to try to dismiss the matter. What are the consequences, as you see them, of favoring one faith tradition over others? You've already touched on that, but I'd like to reiterate it because of its importance.
I mean, it can cut both ways. Religion should be a force for good and a force that brings people together. And I think that the rallying support that this Hindu organization has received from various faith groups is emblematic of that. But at the same time, it can be divisive for a variety of reasons. People may be unfamiliar with Hindu tenets, or maybe there's another religious tradition that comes around the corner. I think it's in Oklahoma where it's the Church of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. Do we want the government to be in a position to decide which religions are, you know, valid enough to pass whatever requirements they have in order to allow a public display? I think that those are very important questions that we need to be asking ourselves. And on just a practical matter, for me personally, if I knew there was a Hanuman statue at any public place, I would want to know that it's not going to be open to being desecrated. I think that people who want to put up Ten Commandments should be thinking about the same thing. Do you want someone spitting on it? Do you want someone urinating on it? I mean, anything can happen in a public space. Someone might throw beer cans at it or put graffiti, and these are the types of things that I think we open up our religious symbols to, those dangers, when we're trying to push public displays in public or areas that are not necessarily going to be protected and considered sacred in the same way that they might on a religious body's property mm-hmm. or a church's property.
So, Suhag, ultimately, would you rather see inclusion and diversity or adherence to the constitutional prohibition on favoring one religion over others in matters like these monuments?
That's a tough one. That's asking me if I like chocolate or vanilla, and I like both. You know, on a practical matter, to err is to be human, and our government is made up of people. So to err on the side of caution and to ensure that all religious traditions are respected, I think the more practical way is to just not put up religious displays. In an idealistic sense, if we ever get to a point where all religions are respected and valued, and we can live in a society where we mutually respect one another for one another's beliefs, and also accept, you know, at some level that someone else might be on their own true path, and my path is not the only way. If we ever get to that, it'd be wonderful to see displays of all, you know, religions standing side by side. But those issues, again, are wrought with problems and with very practical logistical issues.
You know, I can't do this interview without saying how proud I am and how grateful I am to the Hindu American Foundation for honoring me with the Mahatma Gandhi Award. It means a lot to me. The truth is, I'm not biased because of that. I was already very appreciative of the work done by the Hindu American Foundation. Tell us some of your most important current initiatives.
One of the issues that the Hindu community, not just in the United States, but globally face, is the presentation of Hinduism in the academy and as an extension in K through 12 education. Some of the earliest studies of Hinduism were done in the British colonial era. So clearly there were some political and even missionary viewpoints that were coming into the way that Hinduism has been portrayed. So it's not always in not only a positive light, but an accurate light. And so we're trying to right the balance of that. And we've been working with scholar practitioners, with religious figures, as well as educators in creating a Hinduism 101 in which we are training public school teachers on how to teach about Hinduism when they cover their units on world religion or ancient Indian history. So that's a project that's really near and dear to my heart, having gone through the U.S. public education system and being teased relentlessly after those units in which Hinduism was really caricaturized and stereotyped. It's really something that's close to my heart and something that I'm really proud of. The other issue is our human rights work, really focusing and trying to give voice to Hindus, not in the United States, but around the globe in countries like Pakistan and Bangladesh, who really are not able to enjoy the freedoms that we're able to as Hindus in the United States, to freely practice, to freely believe, and to be who we are. And trying to give voice to those communities and bringing awareness to our elected leadership so that when the United States is engaging with those countries, that human rights and religious freedom remain at the forefront alongside with trade and security talks.
Suhag, you know me well enough to know that this next question was coming. We have a former Hindu running for the President of the United States nomination in the Republican Party. My curiosity is, because there is a Hindu on the ballot in the primaries, what are Hindus doing? How are they handling that? Is there a so close an affinity of seeing we have a Hindu possibly in the White House, or are you not paying attention to the religion involved and looking at the merits of that person serving the country?
Well, certainly, I think it means a lot to know that the United States has broken through, at least for the highest office, the race ceiling. Mm-hmm. With the election of President Obama, 2 terms, and, you know, if now an Asian candidate or an Indian American candidate were to be able to hold that office, it certainly is symbolic in that sense. But I still firmly believe that there's a religious litmus test, spoken or unspoken, when it comes to some of these higher offices. And with this particular candidate who renounced Hinduism, I think in his younger days, I think that it's I think it takes our community many steps backwards mm-hmm. because it's not just a matter of finding another path, because certainly Hinduism is a pluralistic tradition that really emphasizes freedom at the individual level to find your way to have a relationship with God. But it's the rebuke of the former tradition, I think that's hurtful, to deny any association or even warm feelings towards it when this candidate was in the Congress and there was a resolution that was recognizing the significance of Diwali to the Hindu, Buddhist, and Jain communities and the Sikh communities as a holiday of significance, he abstained. Now, even if you no longer are part of a particular religious community, certainly you're culturally still connected to them in some way or another, or your parents are, or many of your constituents are. So it's, I think, the outright rejection that we oftentimes see in the rhetoric that comes out that is discouraging and really kind of promotes this idea that in order to succeed, assimilation is more important than integration, and that there is one particular, model that you have to be Christian, even if you're a different skin color or from a different nationality, that somehow that Christianity makes you a little bit more American, that I think is a discouraging message. Hmm.
That's very well said. So I need for this answer, your answer, to be shorter than my question.
Okay.
What is the website of the Hindu American Foundation?
It is www.hafsite.org.
Suhag Shukla is the co-founder and executive director of the Hindu American Foundation, an advocacy organization for the Hindu American community that does great work both here and around the world. She is a good friend. Suhag, I really appreciate you being with us again on State of Belief Radio.
Always a pleasure.
Well, that's all the time we have for this week's show. If you've made a donation to State of Belief Radio this week, I want to say a very sincere thank you. We appreciate your support. The ongoing financial support of our listeners is essential to keeping this show on the air. Look, if you find value in what you're hearing, and if you think it's important that more people hear what you're hearing, I urge you to join our other generous supporters today. Please visit stateofbelief.com. That's stateofbelief.com. Stateofbelief.com is also where you can sign up for our free weekly podcast and find links mentioned during the show. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter and share the stories you find compelling with your friends. We really need you to help bring them into this family so that the discussion is broad and numerous perspectives are represented. State of Belief Radio is a production of Interfaith Alliance. Become a member today at interfaithalliance.org. And be sure to join us next week for more stories from the intersection of religion, government, and politics. Until then, you all take care of each other. I'm Welton Gaddy. That's State of Belief.
The only one who could ever reach me was the son of a preacher man. The only boy who could ever teach me was the son of a preacher man. You see what he was. Mm-hmm.